Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Brandis Friedman is on assignment. Here's what we're looking at.
We're not going to be intimidated.
City and state leaders respond to the Trump administration's ongoing executive orders. Our Spotlight Politics team has the latest.
Their enacted map is not just a little corrupt. It may be one of the most corrupt in American history.
Illinois Republicans call on the state Supreme Court to toss out the map of legislative districts.
Run to the grocery store, make a trip to the hardware store. Buy a new car? Not so fast. Not on Sunday.
If you've got the itch to buy a new car, we explain why you can't do it on Sunday. And now to some of today's top stories. Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration is in active talks with the U.S. House Oversight Committee to testify about Chicago's sanctuary city practices. Johnson says it's not simply about giving testimony.
There are a series of documents that they are requesting, some of which our corporate counsel can speak to. But this is really not about, I don't believe this is just simply about sanctuary cities. This is really about our democracy.
Johnson says President Trump's goal is to get Chicago to surrender its humanity, but that the city's challenges with and support of migrants is longstanding. The city's attorney says she won't divulge private discussions, but that she is in talks with the Republican-led panel about its request. Illinois' public health leader is responding to the Trump administration's move to withdraw from the World Health Organization. Dr. Samir Vohra says he's worried about losing access to data that has allowed Illinois to quickly respond to outbreaks like the bird flu. He says the high volume of international travelers that go through O'Hare Airport, the second busiest airport in the U.S., is another point of concern. In a letter, Dr. Vohra says the agency is exploring buying high-tech tools so IDPH can monitor global disease outbreaks. President Trump has criticized the World Health Organization for how it handled the COVID pandemic, and he says the U.S. pays too much. Northwestern University says it will cooperate with a federal investigation into alleged anti-Semitism on campus. Northwestern is one of five schools the U.S. Department of Education plans to scrutinize after what it describes as an explosion of anti-Semitism. Last May, Northwestern's president was called to testify before a congressional committee about pro-Palestinian protests on campus. In a statement, Northwestern says the school has taken action to address anti-Semitism, including an update to the student code of conduct that prohibits harassment that creates a hostile learning environment. Up next, Illinois' legislative map is facing a legal challenge. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Illinois Republicans are behind a lawsuit asking the state Supreme Court to throw out the legislative district map drawn by Democrats. They say the map is an example of extreme partisan gerrymandering, which renders it unconstitutional under state law. Now, this map was initially challenged in federal court, but the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that partisan gerrymandering cases like this one should be decided by states. Here now to talk about the legal challenges, State Representative and Assistant Republican Leader Daniel Gasty. He's via Zoom from Springfield, where the legislature is in session. We should note we did invite Democratic lawmakers to join us for the discussion, but they declined, saying that House Republicans can't justify their party leaders' unlawful attempts to slash services working families need to access health care, afford rent, and put food on the table. So they are choosing to distract people by relitigating a matter that courts decided years ago. So, Representative Ugesti, let's begin with that Democratic statement. They're saying that this is just an attempt to distract from what President Trump is doing in Washington. Your response?
It has nothing to do with that at all. And thanks for having me tonight. Appreciate it. What this is about free and equal elections and whether the maps were drawn properly under the Illinois Constitution. And there is no way we could have even started to put this together solely working on the time frame of what they're alleging, because what the president is currently doing. This has been something we've been working on for quite some time. An expert was hired, a detailed, lengthy complaint was drawn and filed with the court. So there's no merit to that whatsoever.
You and other Republican leaders have used really strong language to decry this map, and this is of Illinois General Assembly districts, so state legislative districts, not congressional ones, calling it a manipulation of the system. But what is the legal argument here? How is this illegal?
So on two bases. We are challenging it that it violates the Illinois Constitution on two bases. One, under Section 4 of the Illinois Constitution, it says all maps have to be contiguous of approximately equal population, or all districts must be contiguous of approximately equal population, and also compact. And it's violative of that section of the Illinois Constitution, as well as Section 3 of the Constitution, which provides for all elections shall be free and equal. It violates it on two grounds. And what we have is evidence from our expert and detailed in our complaint, which shows that it does violate both of those. And I can go into more detail on each of those if you like, or go from
there. We may soon. In terms of the compact argument, we saw a map, and really you're just alleging that they're drawn to be sort of snake-like instead of as square or close together as possible. Any district that exemplifies that?
Sure. Compactness is a defined term that was already defined, actually, by the Illinois Supreme Court in 1981 in a case that's called the Schrage case. They ruled that a map in central Illinois that at that time was part of Representative Kaler's district, not in relation to the current senator serving, but a Representative Kaler, was drawn in a way that wasn't compact. And the narrowest it was by township. Some of these maps pay no attention to township lines or any other lines, or some of these districts in the current map. And there are currently measurements used by national standards that have been used in other court cases throughout the United States, where you can take and measure the compactness of a district. And we've applied both those to our current maps. And in 52 instances out of 118, so 52 districts out of 118, the current districts, or the districts in our current map, measure less compact than the one that was previously overturned in the Schrage case by the Illinois Supreme Court.
Now, this is a map that has been in law for nearly 4 years. It passed in 2021. So why wait that long to bring this case?
So there were a few things that stood out to us. In 2022, with the elections, what we had was an election in which House Republicans actually received 70,000 more votes than Democrats. And if you were to do it based on those straight numbers alone, we would have had 60 seats and they would have had 58. Yet with the way the maps were drawn, the way it worked out is they have 78 House seats and we have 40. And it just appeared that something was clearly wrong with that. We had new leadership come in. We had to work through a number of things, get up and running, as well as you don't want to file something during the middle of an election cycle. We complained, and rightfully so, about the Democrats' actions in the last election cycle when they changed the rules of the game by disallowing slating to be part of the process. So we weren't going to follow the same process. We were going to wait until that election cycle's over. The election cycle's now over. We are filing it now. There's still each map only affects five election cycles. There are still three left. So we're not really late. We're just not as early as we could have been.
You're saying that Republicans could be in control of the Illinois House. This is a state that is known to be quite blue, where Kamala Harris, for example, easily won in the last presidential election.
Well, what I'm saying is, based upon the 2022 election, now it didn't hold in 2024, but based on the 2022 election alone, the Republicans received 70,000 more votes. In 2024, Democrats received more votes, but not by a margin of 2-1. I believe at most they may have had in Democrat House candidates received approximately 55% or slightly less of the votes, and yet they still have a 2-to-1 super majority. The numbers just don't ever equate.
You know, there's no guarantee that the Illinois Supreme Court is going to hear this case, and I'm curious why you believe that they would, given that 5 of the 7 justices on the state's high court are Democrats.
Because it's the right thing to do. It's clear that based on the evidence we are bringing forward, as well as contained in our complaint, that if you look at it, voters are being disenfranchised. And that's the main thing here. The free and equal election clause is being violated as well. Each voter's voice does not count the same as the other, which is required by our Constitution. And because of that, because we need to protect the voters of Illinois, no matter what our position is, we believe and are optimistic that the state Supreme Court will take it up and do the right thing in this case and overturn these maps and validate them and ask that a special master draw a fair map that complies with our Constitution.
You know, the House Minority Leader Tony McCombie has described this as saying that Democrats rigged the system to maintain their majorities and that this is cheating. Has your party, however, lost credibility on that front, given that President Trump, members of his cabinet, are saying still wrongly that he won the election in 2020? Has your party lost all credibility there?
I don't think one thing has anything to do with the other, in all honesty. It's not a party policy. We are saying this on behalf of Illinois voters. Yes, it's coming from the Illinois House Republicans, but this is just us, the Illinois House Republicans, saying this. We did not take that position as a caucus that I'm aware of about the prior election. So I don't think there's any loss of credibility here whatsoever.
Well, we will leave it at that, and we will be following as the state Supreme Court decides whether and how perhaps to deal with this. We appreciate your joining us from Springfield. Once again, that is State Representative Daniel Gasty.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, our Spotlight Politics team on how local leaders are responding to the Trump administration's executive orders. As President Trump races to roll out new executive orders, state and local politicians are responding in a range of ways. Governor Pritzker's banning January 6th rioters from state jobs and Mayor Johnson calling the president's actions unconstitutional. And as Trump moves forward with abolishing the Department of Education, Illinois lawmakers introducing a bill to push back on presidential priorities impacting local schools. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Heather Sharon and Nick Blumberg. Thanks so much for joining us, team. Now, Governor Pritzker, again, he is saying that pardoned January 6th rioters cannot be employed by the state. Heather, is Mayor Johnson going to do the same for the city?
Not at least right away. I asked him about this today. He said that the governor's move was the right way to go, but declined to issue an executive order that would do the same for city departments. And I think this is especially important because one of the people convicted of participating in the January 6th attack is a former Chicago police officer who his lawyer says wants his job back. Now, last week, I asked Superintendent Larry Snelling if he was the kind of person who should be a member of the Chicago Police Department. Superintendent Snelling didn't answer, saying that he believes Chicago police is the greatest police force in the nation, which I have to point out is not, in fact, an answer to my question.
It's not, in fact, an answer. So you'll be following this, I'm sure. Now, WTTW held a televised special town hall last night. The mayor made news there, saying that he would like to try again to pass the Bring Chicago Home initiative that would increase the tax on home sales over $1 million. Now, here he is today talking about that commitment.
There is an unfair tax structure in this country where those who have keep more and those who have less have to give more. That system in and of itself is inequitable. And we're going to do everything in our power in the city and work with community organizations, work with businesses and corporations to ensure that we have an equitable tax structure that allows us to meet the needs of everyday people.
Heather, that ballot initiative failed last time around. Did the mayor indicate whether he's truly serious about putting this back on the ballot and when?
Well, he didn't give any timeline for that, and he has always seen himself as sort of the leader of a coalition. This was Bring Chicago Home, as it was known, was a years-long effort led by the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and he says it's not really about him and what he wants, it's about what the community wants. What especially caught my ear last night about the mayor's remarks was his really harsh remarks about the fact that he blames the business community for its failure, saying that they leveraged sort of the migrant crisis that everybody was coping with back in March of last year to sort of generate fear about what this would mean for Chicago's economy. I spoke with a number of business leaders today, and they said that that criticism was unfair, that they opposed this ballot measure because it's the wrong policy for Chicago, and that they will do so again if and when it comes back.
But the mayor did have more of an answer than the non-answer that you referenced earlier.
Yes. He did have actually something to say about it, but not, again, committing or saying where the funding would come from to really put this before Chicago voters again, right, Nick?
Well, I mean, certainly this is the kind of thing that it either needs to happen with an act of the General Assembly or a majority of city voters need to approve a big change like this in the real estate transfer tax. I mean, irrespective of timeline, I think it's something that the mayor is going to be interested in, A, because as Heather rightly mentioned, there's a big coalition of people who are politically aligned with him who are still very interested in this idea. And B, as we talked about ad infinitum, maybe ad nauseum over the fall and early winter, the city needs revenue. The city needs sustainable sources of revenue because there is this huge structural deficit that Mayor Johnson and probably whoever comes after him, however long he should serve, will have to be dealing with. There are a lot of issues here, and this could be a major source of funding, and it could be a major source of funding, you know, going towards these sorts of progressive programs that Johnson and his allies really want to see happen.
Right. Certainly right. Work, however, to get it passed, given that, I mean, it did fail. He can say that people want this, but they didn't.
Sure. It's also sort of politically expedient for the mayor because he campaigned back in 2023 about taxing the ultra rich and sort of making corporations pay their fair share. This is one of the few ways that Chicago voters sort of had the immediate ability to do so if they passed a ballot measure. It also comes as he's about to go to Springfield and ask for a lot of new money or a lot of new ways to raise what he calls progressive revenue, which could help shift the burden from property tax to other sources. That, of course, is a big ask for state legislators who have a $3.1 or $3.2 billion deficit of their own to worry
about. Yeah, I heard the mayor make that call again last night, and he really did not parse his words in making demands of the state, but Governor Pritzker has said, we're not looking at new taxes.
Demand away.
Right. Let's move on to the mayor also saying, Nick, that he will not be intimidated by a president who is, quote, operating outside the bounds of the Constitution. Federal workers increasingly afraid for their jobs. And Nick, that does include Chicagoans?
That's right. There was some reporting that about 100 employees at the local Environmental Protection Agency office, which is a regional office. This is multiple states and indigenous American tribes that it oversees. It's a massive workforce there. For folks who are on a probationary period, sometimes reporting about 100 of them notified they could be terminated immediately. New York Times had some reporting nationwide putting that number at 1,000 probationary EPA employees. Of course, this comes on the heel of the entire federal workforce getting this email offering them a chance to resign via email and keep getting paid until September. But, you know, the issue here with these probationary employees They don't have absolutely no recourse. They can allege there is an oversight board for merit federal employees. They can say they were removed for partisan political reasons. They can also go to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or to the special counsel and say they were removed because of their political affiliation. So if folks want to push back on this, they do have some avenues. But clearly the messaging going out to them was basically saying, abandon hope, all ye who enter here. We can fire you if we want to, even though that's not strictly the case.
And, of course, questions as well about the work that they perform protecting the Great Lakes and the environment in the Chicago and surrounding areas. Now, there's another executive order, this one really dealing with the Department of Transportation and how it focuses its funds in a way that could be damaging to Chicago and Illinois. Nick, explain this one.
Yeah, this was newly minted Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy put out an order saying that they should prioritize grant-making loans, all sorts of capital flowing to states, municipalities. Some of the criteria caught people's eye because it was saying they want to see a preference to communities with marriage and birth rates higher than the national average. One other thing that didn't necessarily get as much attention as well, they also said there can't be any mask mandates or vaccine requirements in there as well. But clearly this is, you know, targeting areas like Chicago that have lower marriage rates, that have birth rates. This would give significant advantage to Republican-held areas. We should note this: the Secretary of Transportation does not have unilateral authority to change grant-making rules. This does not immediately take effect. This is a policy statement. This is not something that's going to happen overnight. If they want to change the rules for these grants and for eligibility here, there is an extensive notification and comment process that federal agencies have to go through in order to do this. And I think even if they do go through that quite lengthy process, you will see some legal challenges for the basis here. And we heard from Mayor Johnson today saying, listen, we take all these orders seriously as a threat, but we are parsing whether they are constitutional because many of them have many steps to go before they take effect. So clearly there's a lot in the air here.
The courts are going to be busy, let's say. Yes. And so you're saying basically that the red line funding, therefore, this is for new funding going forward, not previously guaranteed funding, which has its own issues.
Certainly. But the red line extension funding, they have a legally binding document that the CTA and the Department of Transportation have signed. So unless they really want to test the patience of the courts, it'll be pretty difficult for them to withhold those already agreed upon funds.
Now, Heather, back to you. We've got just under a minute left. What is the latest on this top secret gift closet filled with the handbags and the shoes and the cufflinks that Mayor asked about it today?
Well, he said that he still hasn't seen the gift room, and he is still insisting that the Inspector General's office has no right to make an unannounced visit to that gift room. However, the city's top lawyer, Corporation Counsel Mary Richardson Lowry, said they're going to step up efforts to properly document gifts that the mayor's office accepts on the city's behalf, and that they're going to provide a video of the gift room that will show the public exactly what's in there and how it is being stored. Perhaps that will come out next week. Be assured, I will be among the first viewers to get a look at the Gucci handbags and this Kate Spade handbags and the size 14 shoes.
Why a video and not just let people in?
That's a good question.
It's like one a that ring camera pointing in instead of out.
It really is a ring. I don't know. Maybe that's in the gift closet, too. We will find out. That is about out of time for Spotlight. So thank you very much, our very own Heather Sharon and Nick Blumberg. Now, up next, why a weekend shopping trip for a new car might not be in the cards. But first, a look at the weather. Start your engines. The Chicago Auto Show kicks off this weekend at McCormick Place. And while you're perusing the latest in vehicle styles and technology, if you get the urge to buy a car anytime soon, be warned. The state of Illinois has put up a roadblock for you. Our Nick Blumberg has the details, and tonight's WTTW News explains.
Ah, the weekend. The perfect time to knock a few items off the old to-do list. Run to the grocery store, make a trip to the hardware store. Buy a new car? Not so fast. Not on Sunday. Since the 1980s, it's been illegal for car dealerships to operate on Sundays in Illinois. Why? Well, some owners and employees wanted to shut down to spend time with their families or for religious reasons. But, and pay attention, this is the key. they didn't want their competitors to be open and have a chance to steal business. The first attempts to close down dealerships on Sundays date back to the 50s and 60s, but those laws never made it off the lot. They were vetoed or struck down in the courts. But since 1984, Illinois car dealers must close their doors on Sundays. Illinois isn't alone. A dozen other states don't allow Sunday car sales either. It's a vestige of so-called blue laws barring certain activities on the basis of religion, like, say, buying a sports car on the Sabbath. The religious angle is one reason Illinois' ban has been challenged multiple times. One alternate proposal still restricted car sales to 6 days a week, but allowed dealerships to pick which day they take off, since, for example, Jews and Muslims don't observe a day of rest and prayer on Sundays. Some pro-business groups argue the law restricts free commerce, but so far, Illinois has kept the Sunday car sale ban on the books and would-be test drives off the roads. So, if you're looking for a hot deal on a new set of wheels, you'll have to look on another day.
And this year's Chicago Auto Show begins Saturday, runs through February 17th, that is, at McCormick Place. You can watch more in our WTTW News Explained series on our website. And that is our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10, exploring the Trump administration's crackdown on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. And we sit down with actress Kiki Palmer to talk about her new movie and her Illinois roots. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a great night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.